like to ask to make sure that everybody is signed in and we both sign.
Yes, Your Honor.
And I understand that the guardian is not present.
She's not. My last communication about a week and a half ago was she's not signing in.
Okay. Ms. McKee, how much time do you wish to reserve?
I'd like to reserve 3 minutes, Your Honor.
All right. Whenever you're ready.
Okay. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I am Jean McKean. I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Ms. Simone Brown, in this case. Your Honors, in this case, it's an appellant asserts that it's a relatively unique case and an interesting case. And basically, the facts, as Your Honors hopefully have read in my brief, indicate that this case mostly is about mother's use of continued use of marijuana and whether that is sufficient to serve as a termination of parental rights for her infant son.
Ms. McKee, let me ask you just a quick question.
Yes,
before
ma'am.
We get any further along. You've appealed this under 16.1283B.
Yes,
what
ma'am.
About C? Aren't there cases from our court that indicate that if you don't appeal both, then one part of the appeal would be moot, the part under B would be moot?
Your Honor, I didn't read it that way, but my reading was that there was a couple of hurdles that needed to be met first, and the battles are that for termination of parental rights, that it is the PDS's burden to establish that termination of parental rights by clear and convincing evidence that three standards need to be met, Your Honors, and that is that termination of parental rights is in the best interest of the child, that the neglect or abuse suffered by the child presents a serious and substantial threat to his life, health, or development, and that it is reasonably likely that the conditions which resulted in such neglect or abuse cannot be substantially corrected or eliminated.
The court made findings both under B and C, and you've only listed B as a part of your appeal. How does the fact that C is not something that you've raised, how does that impact your appeal in reference to the termination?
Your Honor, I believe that the first hurdle is for the PDSS to establish those factors to terminate parental rights, and they have not done that, even whether B or C gets addressed.
But the trial court made certain findings in the order.
Yes, sir.
And clearly in your opening brief, you recognize that some of those factual findings that the trial court said it was making terminated parental rights under 283B.
Yes, sir.
My concern, and I think Judge Malvo's concern, is in paragraph 15 of the order, which is at page 62 of the appendix, the trial court makes the following finding. Pursuant to Virginia Code section 16.1283C2, and then continues and lists that the mother has not remediated the circumstances as required under that statute. So even if we agree that you're right on everything you've said about why the 283B finding is not supported by the evidence and the circuit court was wrong, where does that leave us, given that, as best I read your brief, there is no challenge to the finding that parental rights could be terminated under C? It seems that we're left with that finding unchallenged on the appeal, and if it's unchallenged on the appeal, we can't address it.
I understand what your position is on that, Your Honor. I would submit that if you're looking solely at the termination of parental rights of Simone Brown, without consideration of placement with relatives, I may have to concede to that. However, what the code also says is prior to considering whether to terminate parental rights or not, and I think that's why I listed that as the first argument in the brief, was that prior to considering termination of parental rights, the court shall consider placement with relatives. And I think that's my strongest arguments here.
But the way that you assign the error is essentially that the court erred in terms of the change in plan, in terms of not considering the family members. Is that
yes.
a fair
yes.
statement of it?
Yes.
To consider it more directly in terms of that error as opposed to combination with the termination. It doesn't seem like your error sets out the error in terms of changing the plan in consideration of the termination.
What again, the code indicates that you can have a plan for adoption. However, prior to terminating parental rights, the circuit court shall consider placement with family members.
Didn't the court do that? Did the court consider the family members and investigate whether they could take care of this child?
The court did, but we assert that the court made error. And particularly, when you look at the standard changes when looking rather to place the children with parents or not. As you are well aware, it's the standard to establish for the Department of Social Services to establish determination of parental rights is clear and convincing evidence that is in the best interest of the child.
But that's not the standard to determine whether or not the relatives are capable of taking care of the child.
Yes, Your Honor. The statute clearly says that that is a lower standard. It is by a preponderance of the evidence, and we would submit...
Wasn't there evidence here where a reasonable trier of fact could conclude that those relatives were not in a position to care for the child adequately?
I would assert that there is not, Your Honor. In this case, the factors are clearly delineated in the statute of what a judge shall consider, and we've met all of those statutes, and the statute clearly says that it shall give a consideration granting custody to the relatives of the child, including, and the legislature particularly noted, including grandparents. And then the statute clearly says that it's by a preponderance of the evidence, the court, after an investigation, and if the court is found by the court to be willing and qualified to receive and care for the child, I think there is absolutely no question that they were willing to receive and care for the child. They're qualified. They have adequate housing. I don't think that's contested. They have both the grandmother and the aunt had jobs. They had daycare plans. They were qualified to receive and care for the child. They both indicated that they were willing to have positive, continuous relationship with the child. There's nothing to dispute that. They both were committed to providing a permanent, suitable home for the child. And even DSS went out and indicated that the homes were suitable and that they would work together to provide care. And they were willing and had the ability to protect the child from abuse and neglect. And the order shall so state. If you look, no reasonable trier of fact could find that these two people, one worked as a security guard for a number of years. I would concede that her husband was incarcerated at the time, but grandmother indicated that she had gotten a new residence. It was just her and her grandson living there. She had daycare.
But hadn't grandmother violated the protection plan that had been put in place by DSS previously? Isn't that something that the trial court could consider?
Well, that is... If you look at the testimony, grandmother indicated that there was two people charged with ensuring that the child was not left alone with mother. There was another person as well, and when she left the household that day, that other person was in charge. Again, there's not any willful intent. There's no... Additionally, curiously... And I know it harkens back, but when you look at this, and I probably frame my argument wrong, this is really a status termination. Really the only thing that Ms. Brown the rights were terminated was because of her low functioning ability and that she failed to continue, she failed to stop using marijuana, that she did continue to use marijuana. Other than that, the evidence is that she provided good household. The evidence was she had stable income. There's no evidence that she starved the child. There was absolutely no evidence that she beat the child. There was absolutely no evidence of any of that. So how can the DSS find that the grandmother failed to protect when there was nothing to protect the child from other than possibly mother possibly, speculatively, smoking marijuana around the child. There's no evidence that she did. There's only evidence is that she had positive drug tests. And as your honors know, dealing with criminals and DUIs, you can drink sporadically but have positive tests. It doesn't mean that you are neglectful. And I probably framed my argument wrong in the brief. It's more of a status, and I would submit the evidence doesn't show that she failed to protect.
Given the situation, though, and given that you know you're going to be tested, and given all of that, couldn't the fact finder take a look at the circumstances and say, I've got somebody who is telling me they want a relationship with this child, they don't want their parental rights terminated, but they know they're putting them in jeopardy by testing positive, by having positive screens. Can't the trier of fact take that into consideration and say that colors everything else?
You could get an inference from that, Your Honor, and I submit that I was disappointed. I wish that Ms. Brown had tested clean, but she did test clean for a period of time. But there's two things to take note in fact for that. Number one, marijuana is not like an alcohol or a cocaine that dissipates from a urine test. It is in your system for 30 days. So it really doesn't indicate how long that system, or whether the use was on a weekend while she was not with a child. Number two, again, it's akin to a status offense. City of Roanoke versus Kane, the court clearly said in that case, the mother was charged with neglecting her child, had been found abused and failing to provide for the child. She was convicted of robbery, and the parental rights were terminated in that case. And the Court of Appeals upheld that, said that that is proof that she was unable to correct the circumstances. However, the Supreme Court said no, incarceration alone is not enough. And again, in this case, the only thing really before the court is continued marijuana use. And
did the testimony of Ms. Stuber, I mean, obviously it was objected to, the nurse indicates that there could be some effects, cognitive effects on E as it related to the marijuana use as well as the asthma condition. I mean, that's something that's present in the record. Isn't that something we have to consider?
Well, you can consider that, Your Honor, but I would look at the weight that you gave that. Number one, it was all speculative. She never said she ever examined the child whatsoever. She had no evidence. The child had asthma, but she admitted that that could be hereditary, that could be from cigarette smoke, that could be from the foster home. Well, she did not acknowledge that, but additionally, Your Honor, she was not the treating physician. She acknowledged that she was not a doctor.
Speaking you're into your rebuttal time.
Oh, yes, ma'am.
Continue if you wish to.
No, I reserve that. Thank you very much, Your Honor, for your time and for listening.
Good afternoon. May it please the Court, Miriam Arrington, on behalf of Petersburg Department of Social Services. Your Honors, this matter is going to be viewed in the light most favorable to the department, and as I think we've all acknowledged, the standard here is that the trial court decision will be upheld unless it's without evidence to support it or plainly wrong. Respectfully, I would submit that this is a case where there is substantial evidence in the record supporting the trial court's decision, as well as a very...
Is that evidence involve simply the fact that the mother was smoking marijuana?
No, Your Honor, and I appreciate that question because I think that up to this point there has been a large focus on marijuana. I think that was one of the perhaps sort of surprising or outrageous factors below where she continued to test positive.
But wasn't that the basis for the initial assumption of custody by DSS, was it not?
Your Honor, that is not how I view
the
record.
Wasn't it the mother tested positive for smoking marijuana at the time of birth?
Yes, Your Honor. The mother tested positive when the child was born, obviously giving rise to the fact that the child was exposed in utero to marijuana. There was some testimony at trial about the potential effects of that.
Is that sufficient to assume custody of a child?
Well, Your Honor, respectfully, I don't know that we need to reach that conclusion because that was not the only basis for the child being taken into custody. The child was actually remained with his family for about a year after he was born. The initial exposure to marijuana in utero was what brought social services into the family's life, but the child was not immediately removed. The child was subject to a safety plan, as the court has noted, and there was conditions in place for mother to comply with counseling, substance abuse treatment, not be left alone with the child. It was after that safety plan was violated and additional concerns were raised about the suitability of the home itself and the people residing there that the child was taken into care. And so while there has been there is a significant amount of focus at trial as to the marijuana use, there was also the issue of unstable housing, that the guardian ad litem report and the testimony from the social worker about concerns in the home. Judge Teefee characterized it as a party atmosphere with various people living there. There was structural concerns about the home, who was residing there, who was supervising the child. There was some evidence that there was domestic violence between the parents that the child was exposed to, as well as an allegation that there had been a robbery at the home. That was all in the record. So while marijuana, I think, was sort of an egregious violation on the part of the mother, that she continued to test positive and didn't comply with services, there were also those other factors as well, and it was the totality of that that resulted in the child being taken into care and then remaining in care for such a long time because those conditions were not properly remedied.
Do you agree that the circuit court's termination of rights was based both on a violation of 283B and 283C?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that Judge Teefee discussed both of those at length. And I will say that I did not identify the issue that the court has raised, and so I don't know that I'm prepared to speak very intelligently on the case law that Your Honor referenced regarding that. I will simply say that I think that there is, again, substantial evidence supporting the termination in the record, and that Judge Teefee very, very clearly and in a very detailed way explained everything that he was relying on. I would like to briefly respond to the appellant's contention that the trial court didn't properly consider the placement of relatives. I think that the Hawthorne v. Smith County case really best kind of lays out what the trial court's responsibility is and what the department's responsibility is. And so in that case, the court says that the people have to be considered, and that can either be done through evidence presented by a Department of Social Services investigation or by an Ora Tennis hearing by the trial court. And that very much was done in this case. Essentially, these folks were considered a few different times, and I think it's also important to note that the record reflects that these were not family members that were brought to the court's attention by the appellant. I think the testimony from the social worker was that those family members were not provided to social services by the appellant as alternatives. These were folks who came forward in the juvenile court and filed their own custody petitions. That would be Ms. Brown and Ms. Hall. Their petitions were litigated in the juvenile court, dismissed, and not appealed. The circuit court then heard evidence again.
But isn't an independent custody petition of an interest, or what the statutes refer to, an interest party, that's different than the proceeding that leads to this, where the circuit court is required to consider whether there's a family placement?
Yes, Your Honor, and I'm not arguing, or I didn't intend to argue, that them having their petitions heard in juvenile court alleviated the circuit court of the responsibility, but I think that the circuit court judge did note on the record that he considered that factor, that they had been presented below and dismissed and not appealed. In essence, I think that goes more to the point that these were people who were known to the court, they were known to social services. There was testimony that a social worker had been out to the homes. The guardian ad litem was familiar with these people. So I would submit that the record is clear that they were considered. And I think most importantly for the Hawthorne ruling, the circuit court heard from them, Ora Tennis, and laid out with great specificity why he didn't believe that they were appropriate placements. Some of the factors that were touched upon was that Ms. Hall essentially had no relationship with the child. She had sort of an 11th hour relationship by marriage, but she didn't have a personal relationship with the child. She had not participated in the family meetings, and she had not been visiting with the child. There were concerns about her home because of her husband being a drug dealer and him planning to return to the home. I think that the primary concern with Ms. Brown is that she had been a a party to the violation of the safety plan, which resulted in the child being brought into care. She had not properly supervised the child in accordance with the initial safety plan, again, the goal of which had been to avoid all of this and avoid the child being removed from the home. In addition, there was testimony that her home itself, the environment was not appropriate, that there was the roof had caved in, was her testimony. The guardian ad litem's report was that it was a party atmosphere, that there was a number of different unidentified men living there or staying there when she did a surprise home visit on the home. In addition, the trial court noted that they did not present any evidence about a long-term or permanent willingness to raise the child, that is an important factor. Under the Cook case, when the trial court is looking at alternative placements, they're not looking just at the best interest of the child standard as you would in a typical custody case. They're also looking at the factors that are laid out in 16.1-282.1. Most specifically in this case, that there was no evidence of continued and long-term willingness to have a relationship and continue to care for the child. And so for those reasons, I respectfully disagree. I think that there is ample evidence on the record that alternative placements were considered by the court, and the record is very clear as to why they were not considered to be appropriate placements and why the termination proceeded and the child remained in care. The next contention that I'd like to address is that the trial court erred in granting the TPR. And as we've sort of touched on already, the abuse and neglect that initially brought PDSS into the child's life was in utero marijuana use. That use continued but for a very brief period of time. I believe it was 4 months in 2015 that mother was testing clean. She then had an apparent relapse and continued to test positive up until the very day of the termination hearing.
Is there any evidence that that drug use, as the statute sets out, affected her ability to parent the child? To the extent that proper parental ability has been seriously impaired.
Your Honor, in respect to that, I think there has to be some inferences drawn from the record because of the child was so young. He was about 1 year old when he was removed. So the initial testimony is that there was in utero exposure, and we did have testimony at trial.
What if the testimony was that the mother was consuming alcohol during the pregnancy? Would that be sufficient to meet that same threshold standard?
I'm not sure, Your Honor. I mean, one obvious, I think, distinction is that marijuana is illegal.
What if the mother were 20 years old and consumed alcohol?
I think that would be a more comparable argument.
The point is that there's a lot of things that mothers do that are not healthy for a child. And it concerns me that we might be walking down a road where we say that unless the mother follows all of the rules set out by the doctor, that you risk losing your child.
I think that that is a concern, Your Honor, and respectfully, I don't think that we're walking that line here. It might be more in that posture if perhaps the child had been immediately removed from the mother's home at birth simply because of the positive drug screen. That's not the situation here. The marijuana use was certainly a concern, and that's what alerted the department to concerns in this home. However, I really don't believe that we can kind of separate what the other concerns were. Whether they were directly related to marijuana use, I think that there's at least an argument that it is.
Tell me what parenting skills, parenting ability has been impaired by the drug use.
Well, I think initially in terms of injuring the child or endangering the child, there was testimony that the child had asthma, that the child had started to show some cognitive delays. Of course, as the nurse testified, a lot of those delays wouldn't be fully fleshed out and fully seen until he was older than two. But there was evidence about suffering from asthma, suffering from some speech delays, that could be linked to marijuana.
Was there any evidence to actually link it to inhalation of secondhand marijuana smoke? Or is it all speculation?
Respectfully, I don't... I, I would characterize it as more than speculation. What weight it was given to the trial court, I think that...
But there's no evidence in the record of anybody saying that she consumed marijuana, with the exception of the in utero exposure, that the child was ever exposed to her marijuana smoking.
I think that that's correct. I would agree with that, Your Honor, to the best of my recollection. The not using marijuana was a condition that was one that she agreed to or was put upon her that she signed off on with DSS, and that was violated. But then subsequently that was a condition that was placed on her by the court that was violated. I would ask the court to view that in conjunction with some of the other things, which is her inability to provide a safe environment for the child. There was testimony about her unstable living conditions, about the bad actual physical conditions of the home that she was residing in, of the domestic violence between her and the child's putative father, who was subsequently determined not to be his father, but of that gentleman who was living in the home, and her continued relationship with him and continuing to live with him, even after DSS expressed a concern about that. Additionally, the other allegations about the violence in the home and her lack of compliance, not just with remaining drug-free, but also with the counseling services that were put into place for her, offered by DSS, and then ordered into by the lower court. On brief, Ms. Brown asserts that she substantially complied, that she did many of the things that that she was ordered to do. And while I would readily agree that it's not a case where she completely ignored everything, I do think that over the course of time that the child was in care, I believe it was 14 or 15 months between the time that he was taken into care in this hearing, that there was constant violations, there was failure to follow through on any of the conditions, and just a complete inability to remedy any of the concerns that PDSS had initially expressed and that the court then adopted. I think I have about 1 minute left if Your Honors have any additional questions. Thank you.
Your Honors, respectfully, I'd like to just counter a couple of things. I think the evidence produced at the hearing by the Petersburg DSS's own witness, Brittany Robinson, she testified consistently and at least twice that I noted in the transcript that Ms. Brown provided stable housing, her home was adequate, that income was not an issue, that she had observed her with Edward, and that she was able to redirect him and listen to him and was able to redirect his behavior as well, and never indicated any issues with Edward whatsoever. And I would echo Your Honor's questions and concerns that there was no evidence that the marijuana use was at the same time that Ms. Brown had Edward or in any way impacted her ability to take care of Edward. I would again maintain that this is a status offense and it's a tragedy, and I probably should have formed it better in my brief, but clearly that's what comes to mind for me is it solely a status offense and it doesn't rise to the occasion.
Am I correct in reading your argument that you are only challenging the findings that are required under 16.1-283B as you are not challenging and not have raised an argument that it's not in the best interest of the child for termination to have occurred?
I would argue also that it's not in the best interest.
I don't want to know what you're arguing now. I'd like to know what you believe the scope of your assignment of error and the argument in your brief is.
Well, I argued that the judge failed to consider what was in the best interest of Edward at the appropriate standard, which was the preponderance of the evidence. And had he done so, the best interest, and I think the legislature has recognized that one of the factors is placement with family members, so you know your lineage. And so that's why they have a lower standard with family and that the judge should consider that. And respectfully, I disagree with what the record indicates about both Ms. Hall and the grandmother. Clearly, if you look at the testimony, again, grandmother indicated she went and got, and I would also like the courts to consider very briefly that up until September of 2000, up until September, I believe, of 2015, the goal was return home. Then it changed. And so up until then, there was no need for a parent to come forward. The goal was return home. It was not until September and by December.
That's always the goal, the initial goal, is it not? And then it's only when the parent can't do what he or she's required to do that the goal changes.
Yes, Your Honor. But in this case, she was making progress for a while. So for a long time, the goal was return home. And then all of a sudden, in September, it changed. By December, they terminated the rights.
Your time is up.
Thank you very much,
Your Honor. Down in Bridge Council, this is your question.